Welcome to Tuesday evenings. I'm Terry Thornton, curator of education here at the Modern. I think most of you realize that Tuesday evenings is a weekly lecture series. It's free and open to the public. And it's running through November 19th this fall. So please mark your calendars, get on the website and see the listing for the other lectures. Mark your calendars and come back and join us in coming weeks. Next week, the Chicago-based artist, curator, art writer, chair of painting and drawing at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, senior critic for Yale University in painting and printmaking, and the curator of the 2014 Whitney Biennial, Michelle Grobner, will be here to present her own work as an artist, her innovative artist-run spaces such as Suburban, which is a space behind her house, as well as the process of curating the Whitney Biennial in a presentation she's calling The Center Doesn't Hold. So I highly recommend that you come back and bring a friend. Tonight, we continue our look at the Modern's recently opened exhibition, Mexico Inside Out, Themes in Art Since 1990, which is an ambitious exhibition of work of 23 artists and artist collectives, aptly described in Sunday's Star Telegram as a seriously fierce and compelling exhibition. It's our personal fortune and a point of pride that the curator of the exhibition is the Modern's own curator, Andrea Carnes, assisted by Assistant Curator Allison Hurst. Andrea has worked on this exhibition for what I'm saying is four, maybe 3.5 years from conception. She's worked on it for 3.5 to 4 years from conception, and the last year has been an intense commitment to the organization of this complex and worthwhile undertaking. That commitment is to our benefit tonight, as no one else, except perhaps Allison Hurst, shares Andrea's insights and expertise on the subject. Tomorrow she will be discussing the show with KERA's Chris Boyd on the radio program Think from 1 to 2. So if you don't get enough tonight, in fact, I'm sure knowing Chris, she'll bring out things that won't get covered tonight. So I encourage you to listen in tomorrow, 1 to 2 p.m. on KERA. This, of course, is not Andrea's first rodeo. In addition to Mexico Inside Out, she has, in her position as a curator at the Modern, challenged audiences with contemporary exhibitions such as the impressive Hubbard Burschler, No Room to Answer in 2009, as well as Pretty Baby in 2007, which was a huge hit, a group exhibition, another large group exhibition, not as large as this one, but large nevertheless. She likes a challenge. In 2005, Andrea organized Pierre Wieg, 1 Million Plus Kingdom, an intriguing exhibition of a careful selection of works by the renowned French artist Wieg. And in 2004, she put together a beautiful and haunting selection of paintings by the internationally recognized and Fort Worth-based artist Julie Bosey for Hidden in Plain Sight. We also have Andrea to thank for the Modern's ever-popular focus exhibitions that began in the early days of this building with artists such as Cornelia Parker, Adam Fuss, and Vera Luter, and that have included a spectacular array from emerging to well-established artists, as with her upcoming focus exhibitions with the artist Terry Haggerty and Rick Ritt Tiravonnet. I was recently corrected on the pronunciation of his name, and so I'm still working on it, Tiravonnet, who is, of course, another internationally recognized, much acclaimed artist, so we're very excited about that. Andrea was also one of three contributing authors for Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth, 110, the museum's permanent collection catalog, which was published in 2002. Many of the students here tonight in tonight's audience will be encouraged to learn that a BA degree in art history from University of North Texas in 1988, and a master's degree in art history at Texas Christian University in 2000 equipped Andrea Carnes for all the accomplishments mentioned here and much more. Tonight is our great fortune to have Andrea Carnes here to share her valuable insights into Mexico Inside Out in her presentation titled On the Daily. So please join me in giving her a warm welcome.
Thank you, Terry, and thanks for mentioning Think, which I'm so nervous about that now I'll be focused on that. No, I'm very thrilled to get to go and talk about the exhibition tomorrow on Think. And I thought what I would do tonight is talk about the exhibition for those of you who may or may not have seen it yet in such a way that it may give you some threads of thought to go on when you go through the exhibition. I'm going to start here. John, I think we're ready for the lights. There are 23 artists included in Mexico Inside Out and over 60 works. That's too much to talk about in one evening in 50 minutes. And I'm not even going to talk about all the artists in the exhibition, but I wanted to give you sort of the overarching theme for the exhibition. A lot of people have asked me, why Mexico? How did you come up with this idea? And what is the theme of the exhibition? And so I thought we would just keep it very simple tonight and talk about those things. The why Mexico is because over the past decade or more, as I've traveled around to do research and to see exhibitions all over the world, I've seen these artists that are in this exhibition, not all of them, but the kind of historical anchors for the exhibition, the ones who matured in the 1990s. I've seen these artists across the globe, but I've hardly seen them here in Texas. And we not only, you know, we're neighbors with Mexico, we actually border Mexico. We share the same geographic territory, even if ideologically we differ in areas. So I was kind of shocked to find that this type of exhibition hadn't been done here before, but also thrilled at the prospect of doing it. So I started by going to Mexico with Allison Hurst, our assistant curator, who helped me with every aspect of this exhibition. Because it's such a large-scale exhibition, it couldn't have been done alone, and everyone here on staff, of course, has been helpful throughout the process. But I started by going to Mexico to meet with artists. I had some on the top of the list, the ones who I had seen or heard of before. And then through those artists, I figured out who else I should maybe go and see and visit. And also visiting the institutions in Mexico and speaking with the curators there. And sort of figuring out what the local scene was and trying to find a common thread. And the common thread that I came up with for the exhibition is the idea that every artist in this exhibition has an intense focus and a connection with daily life. It's kind of a simple premise, this big umbrella of daily life, but I thought it was really important to find something that kind of cast a wide net as a point of access for all of us who haven't seen these artists here in our area before. And so after figuring out the theme of daily life, I realized that some aspects of dealing with daily life are intensely local for many of these artists. They're about Mexico. They have to do with Mexico. But they're also global issues of corruption, issues of violence, humor, issues of progress, issues of failed attempts. These are all things that we can all relate to, no matter where we're from. And so that's how the title Inside Out came into being, the idea that these things are inside Mexico, but that they reverberate outward into a global arena. So this image here is one that the artist Thomas Glassford sent to me. Thomas Glassford is in this exhibition, and I will talk about his work a little bit later, but he is inspired by daily life in Mexico City. Thomas was born in Laredo, Texas, but he has lived in Mexico City for the past 20 years. And so he's definitely a part of the scene in Mexico and has, of course, had exhibitions in Texas and in the U.S. and in Europe as well. So when Thomas sent me a few of his source images, including this one, it made me think about how to break down the theme of daily life, because there are so many artists and they all handle this theme of daily life in different ways. And so what I came up with as a way of organizing the exhibition was to break down daily life into three categories. The first category of daily life is building contemporary monuments. The second category is interrogating systems of power. And the third category is magnifying the everyday. So that's kind of the broad theme of the exhibition. And as we go through some of these images, I will give you examples that are in the exhibition of those three categories of sort of an intense focus on daily life. Many critics, artists, and scholars in Mexico kind of mark this moment of a new avant-garde in Mexico with the Tlatelolco massacre in 1968. So student movements, the counterculture was going on across the globe at this point, in the U.S., in Europe, in Russia, in Asia, and in Mexico, the rise of the counterculture. In 1968, Mexico City was hosting the Summer Olympics. And in anticipation of the Olympics, a group of students from UNAM, the university in Mexico City, organized a peaceful protest through the city 10 days before the Olympics. And the idea was that all eyes internationally were on Mexico, and they wanted to call attention to corrupt government and government oppression. And so the students marched into this plaza in Tlatelolco, and peaceful march, but when they arrived there, the government took a hard line. And so many students were literally bulldozed over, arrested, slain, and taken away. And the event shocked the country in the same way that Kent State shocked our country or Tiananmen Square in Beijing. It's the same type of event. But it's a marker, art historically, in that it gave rise to artists who were looking outside of national rhetoric and looking for places to show their work outside of the national museums in Mexico. So it's kind of this moment, and a lot of the artists in this exhibition refer to 1968 and this incident. The moment shocked the country. It was a loss of innocence. The cover-up that ensued equally shocked the country. So the numbers range from 4 killed to in the 400s to in the thousands. And these documents weren't re-released until the 2000s through the U.S. So it was a moment in Mexico in which there was this rise of the counterculture, especially artistically. Ephemeral works were being done around the city, especially by a group or several groups of artists known as Los Grupos, who were active in Mexico throughout the 70s and through the early 80s. Then, of course, the earthquake in Mexico City in 1985 is another moment that marks a change in the art of Mexico. And I'm just sort of briefly situating the artist in this exhibition historically by giving you this information. The literal failure of structures and of architecture in Mexico City during this catastrophic event symbolized a crumbling government and the devaluation of the peso. And the events that led up to the earthquake and then the way the disaster was handled in Mexico City are another moment that marked a turning point for artists in Mexico. As the city healed and recovered, several artists moved to Mexico from Europe and from America, like Thomas Glassford, whose work you saw, like the Belgian-born Francis Elise and the British-born Melanie Smith. And they met up with and began to show with artists already in Mexico City, like Gabriel Orozco, who had studied abroad in Madrid and brought a lot of ideas back to Mexico City. So this is 1989. This is Gabriel Orozco. And this is a monastery in Mexico City where this exhibition, A Propósito, on Purpose, was held. The exhibition was in homage to Joseph Beuys. Artists such as Melanie Smith and Francis Elise were also in this exhibition. It was in a monastery in Mexico, an alternative space. So these artists had no place at the time in the institution and were forced to figure out alternative spaces, independent-run projects, in order to get their work shown. Not only did they not have a place in the institution, but they weren't even acknowledged by the institution in Mexico at the time. And what they were doing was so different from what was inside the museums in Mexico City that they felt like they had to move beyond somehow. And they just did it on their own with very little money. And this is, you know, verging on the 1990s. So globalization of the art market is beginning to take place, as well as of information. So these are some of the historical anchors for this exhibition here in this image from 1991. This is Thomas Glassford in the middle. This is Gabriel Orozco next to him. There, in this image, they're at Blue Star Contemporary Art Space in San Antonio, which is the last time and at times the only time for some of them that they have shown in Texas. So again, these artists have just not had a big presence here, and that's why I felt like it was important, since they're known globally, that we have a big introduction to them here. This is Francis Elise, who was here last week to speak, and Melanie Smith, who will be here in a few weeks to speak. So these artists, as I said, form the historical anchors for the exhibition. They rose to prominence. They matured as artists in the 1990s. They have influenced the artists in Mexico who have come since then, including Joshua Ocon, who started this alternative space in the mid-1990s in Mexico City called La Panaderia, in an old bakery in Mexico. This was kind of a... Joshua is in our exhibition with a collaborative partner, Miguel Calderon. They opened this space, La Panaderia, in Mexico City. This is the street and building where Joshua's studio still is today, so I've visited it many times. It does not look like this now. But it was kind of they were kind of the bad boys of the Mexican art scene, and they had music, they had happenings, they had artists, who are kind of in the middle ground of the exhibition. Not the historic anchors, but artists like Teresa Margolles and Artemio, and even Francis Elise, showed here at La Panaderia. So this was just kind of to give you some information about what I was finding and what I was looking for when I first started visiting Mexico City. I think I naively wondered if any of the artists working in Mexico were connected at all to the muralist or to social realism. And what I actually found was that the only artist who I've worked with connected to the muralists was Barry McGee, the Chinese-American artist who I did a focus exhibition with last year. So, but that's not really true. I mean, there's this element of socio-political consciousness that runs throughout the work in Mexico inside out. So rather than, I mean, these artists deal, as we've discussed, with daily life. But rather than look to their immediate predecessors in Mexico, like the muralists, the big three, or any of the muralists, and really rather than looking to New York in the late 1980s, which had a completely different vibe, these artists were looking to European and American conceptualists, and they were looking to minimalism and post-minimalism. And in Mexico at the time, in the early 1990s, several artists were creating remakes. This is Bruce Nauman's Self-Portrait as Fountain. This is Daniel Guzman and Luis Felipe Ortega doing Bruce Nauman's Fountain, doing Bruce Nauman's Bouncing the Corner and Vito Acconci's Saliva Studies. So they start to do these remakes, and basically it's revisionist in a sense. These artists are recognizing and in dialogue with the fact that they're on the periphery. They're marginalized. New York is the center of the art world. They're not there. So this, which you see when you walk into the museum, is by Eduardo Abaroa. It's the earliest work in the exhibition, and it's called Portable Broken Obelisk for Outdoor Markets. It is a remake of Barnett Newman's Broken Obelisk. So the idea is that this goes along with the remakes. This is the iconic remake by these artists in Mexico at the time. And of course, Barnett Newman's work is this icon of modernist sculpture. And it is an obelisk turned on its head, literally turned on its head, and violently broken on its end, made of Corten steel. And at the time it was made, in the mid to late 1960s, 63 to 69, it was kind of a comment on civil unrest in the U.S., you know, taking basically the Washington Monument and turning it on its head after Martin Luther King gave his speech, I Have a Dream speech here, and then was assassinated a few years later in 68 before this piece was finished. So the idea that this is social commentary on the U.S. at the time it was made. But it's non-traditional in that it turns the obelisk on its head, but it's traditional in that it is this iconic piece within the canon of modern art. So Eduardo Abaroa takes the garish pink tarps from Mexican outdoor markets and creates the same obelisk. It's called Portable Broken Obelisk for Outdoor Markets. So in doing so, he kind of levels the field of class inequity. This thing is nomadic. It's portable. You can put it up anywhere. You don't have to be in a museum to see it. You don't have to have money or be in any elite group to see this work. But it also speaks to the notion of materials at hand, the materials available to Eduardo Abaroa versus the materials available to Barnett Newman. But also that idea that information wasn't traveling to Mexico, at least not in school. They all had to meet outside of school in these alternative spaces in order to figure out what was going on in the art world at large, because they were still being taught the Mexican muralist at the university level. So this work, just as a side note, it's leaning a little bit. And it's outside here, and it leans a little bit. It's a little bit sad. And several people have said to me, it just needs to straighten up, including the artist. When he came, he said, you just need to jiggle it a little bit. Just make it can straighten up. And so we had a discussion with him about how it could break, because it's resting on one little point here in the center. And he understood that, and he said, well, the thing is, I made it for $300 20 years ago, and it's and it's meant to be this rickety version of a Barnett Newman. It's meant to be about the materials at hand. But it also comments on this idea of illegal but tolerated markets in Mexico, the idea of piracy, the idea of what you can get away with, because it relates to the outdoor market, which is where it was first installed. So back to the idea that the exhibition is about daily life, and that first category is building contemporary monuments. I put this image here of Teotihuacan, the ancient Aztec site, just to remind you that Mexico has a penchant for monuments. And, of course, there's Chichen Itza, and, you know, you can't walk three blocks in Mexico City without running into another monument. So artists in this exhibition have carried that tradition forward. And I should say, just because I'm putting them in one category or another, many of the artists in this exhibition fit into all three all three categories, including Eduardo Abaroa. I'll just go back to this for a minute. It fits into the idea of it is a monument. I don't think we need to say much more about that part of it. But it also questions systems of power and of information and of illegal versus legal and of artist at the center of the art world versus artist on the periphery. And it also magnifies the everyday. It takes a common material of the Mexican market and turns it into something completely different. So back to the category of monument. I wanted to give you guys a few examples when you walk through the exhibitions of things you could see that relate to the idea of building contemporary monuments. This work, Wish You Were Here, is a work by Jonathan Hernandez. It's part of his mirrored series taken from song titles. This is from the Pink Floyd song and album Wish You Were Here, which is the band's tribute to Syd Barrett, who suffered a mental breakdown. This album came out in 1970. But here, reworked by Jonathan Hernandez, you walk up to the mirror. It's at the length of your body, so you can see yourself. You can see your own reflection in these words, Wish You Were Here. And then you can see what's behind you. So the piece becomes a metaphor for your own past and your present. And in relationship to Texas and Mexico, the idea that this sentiment can reverberate between the two places, the idea that if you've migrated here from anywhere or if you've lost anyone anywhere, this work would speak to you. So it's a monument of the desire to have something that you've lost. This work by Edgardo Aragon, and I should mention Edgardo is one of the younger artists in the exhibitions. In the exhibition, this is the first time that artists such as Edgardo have gotten to show with artists such as Gabriela Rosco and Frances Elise and Melanie Smith and sort of the historical anchors. So this was a big deal for all of the artists involved in that way as well. And I think some of them were probably more okay with it than others. The young ones absolutely loved it. But I think even the ones who matured in the 1990s are kind of thrilled to see a connection to them, something that came after them that they may have had an impact on or their work had an impact on. This work is a monument to sort of the cyclical nature of turf wars in Mexico. This is an antique stone marker in the region of Oaxaca. And above it, you see a man holding a tuba. This is a giant photograph within our exhibition, but the actual piece includes a video of many musicians playing a song, Tinieblas, which means darkness. And here, the song is of Guatemalan origins, but it's been adopted by Mexico. Here, the song and the title of this work have to do with the turf wars and sort of the idea that they're still unresolved today, this idea of fighting over territory and the cyclical nature of that. This work by another one of the young artists in the exhibition, Jose Jimenez Ortiz, is a work that questions what happens when people die, how social media kind of eternalizes the deceased, and it questions what does it mean to live on eternally through social media. This work by Itaid Rodriguez is in the exhibition. It is a sound piece. There's a corridor on the west side of the building, and you walk through the corridor, and it's meant to look like a sterile hospital corridor. And you put your ear to the wall, and you can hear people reading letters. The piece is a monument to those forgotten and displaced from Mexico City's main mental institution, which in 1968, as part of the cleansing of the city before the Summer Olympics, was shut down. And all the people in the institution, if they didn't have a family to go to, were just displaced and sort of out of sight and out of the government's mind. And so Itaid wanted to do an homage to these people with this work. And he went to the archives. He found letters of people who had been in the institution who had written letters to their families. And what you hear is people reading those letters out loud. When Idaid was here, he wanted to talk to me urgently. And I thought something was wrong. He wasn't happy with something about the piece. And so I went to him to see what he wanted. And I saw some flowers on the ground. I thought maybe he wanted to give me flowers. I wasn't sure where he was going with this. But what he wanted was he wanted to ask me if before they closed the hatch in the wall, if he could make a private altar to the people who were displaced here. So he had flowers and he had candles, which he did not light. But he made a private altar that's housed within the wall for the people who he made the piece for. And I asked him if I could give out that information or if it could be on the label, and he said he didn't mind what I did with it. It was just something he wanted to do and something he didn't want to tell me about in advance. So this work by Teresa Margolyes is a wall from Culiacan, where the artist was born. The piece is an actual wall. It's 7 feet high by 13 feet long. It's riddled with bullet holes from a shootout between police and a drug cartel. Two officers died in front of this wall. The heaviness of this piece, I mean, you know, again, all of these artists are in dialogue with art history. You could talk about it in terms of sculpture and in terms of minimalism, which I'm sure you all will think of when you go and see the exhibition. But the fact that it's a real object and, you know, it really speaks to the most important and grave social issue in Mexico right now. This work, like Teresa Margolyes, is by the artist Artemio. It is a giant pile of earth from the Chihuahuan Desert, and it is a memorial to the women, the maquiladora women, the factory workers who were murdered in Juarez, starting in the 1990s after the signing of NAFTA, when the U.S. started a program with Mexico for cheap labor in which women would travel back and forth between El Paso and Juarez to work in these factories. And there were, many of these women were murdered and raped and tortured, and the drug wars eventually overshadowed any investigation into what was going on, whether the crimes were gender-based or whether they were done by the cartel, or, you know, it's kind of a mystery. It's still very speculative as to why all these maquiladoras were killed and still are today, actually. It's just overshadowed. But Artemio creates this monument to these forgotten women, and this is actually in Juarez, just a monument to 8 women who were found here buried in the desert. So the idea is that these women are buried under layers of the desert, and this sort of abstract political rhetoric as to what to happen to them is also buried in this same earth. So now we're moving on from the monuments to daily life portion to the idea of interrogating power systems in Mexico. Mexico has a longstanding tradition of questioning its vacillating power structure, and the artists in this exhibition are no different. Many of them investigate exactly that, the idea that there have been a lot of failed promises about modernity in Mexico, and just how they deal with that. So this is a work by Francis Alice. It's a very upbeat work when you hear it in the exhibition. A brass band plays in the background. This is a Volkswagen in Tijuana going up and down a hill. The brass band is practicing a new song. So every time the band has a misstep or takes a break, the Volkswagen, which is making its way up the hill, starts to roll backwards. So it never makes it to the summit, like the mythic Sisyphus, who was punished for his chronic deceitfulness, right, rolling the boulder up the hill but never making it to the top. In this case, Sisyphus, or the beetle, is a proxy for the Mexican government. Always these failed attempts for modernity, these false promises toward modernity. But when you see the piece, the music is very upbeat, and this red beetle bisects the screen in this sing-song motion constantly. So there's, and you know, the absurdity of it trying and trying but never reaching the top. So there's this element of slapstick as well, and the idea of doing the same thing over and over again but never getting different results. This is a work by Melanie Smith. This work alone could take it the whole time to dissect, so I won't do that. Melanie will be here in a few weeks, and she can talk about the piece herself. But this work is called Aztec Stadium. This is Mexico City's main stadium. It was built also in anticipation of the Summer Olympics. It was built in 1963 before the 68 Olympics and also before the 1970 World Cup. It is also a metaphor for failed attempts toward modernity. In the work, Melanie asked 3,000 high school students to participate holding up placards of Mayan visages and luchadors and pop culture and political figures. So she knew that this was a recipe for disaster. How long can you keep the attention of 3,000 high school students? So in the beginning of the work, everything is going, you know, it's completely syncopated. Everything's going as it should. But by the end of the work, the students are bored. They're throwing the placards around. The whole thing dissipates. So this becomes a cycle for chaos and revolution and sort of, again, like Francis's piece, the failed attempts at modernity. This is a work by Miguel Monroy. We're still in the section of daily life as it relates to interrogating power systems. This work includes 91 receipts that start with 1,000 pesos and get exchanged into dollars over and over again until the total value is zero. Nothing is purchased. These are just government fees and taxes that bring the value of the money to zero. So he just exchanged that money back and forth. And then, of course, he framed the receipts to document the piece. This is Minerva Cuevas' work. It's a giant mural in the exhibition. It's called America. It does not specify what part of America. We're all, you know, here, Central America, this indigenous background, and then Scrooge McDuck diving into a pile of money. So speaking to the idea of greed or what it, how far we've come from the indigenous land. This is a work by Gustavo Artigas. It took place in San Diego. It is a video. It is two high school teams from San Diego playing basketball on a basketball court, while two soccer teams from Tijuana play soccer on the exact same court at the exact same time. Incredibly, there were no major incidents, and actually the basketball teams and the soccer teams both finished their games. But the idea is that it's this exercise in boundaries and territory and how to navigate space in new ways. This work is by the artists Tercer and Quinto. Tercer and Quinto is a three-person collective. I have it here mainly to say that several of the works in the exhibition were site-specific for the modern, including this one. This is on the Six Point intersection at Camp Bowie and University in Bailey over here. And it faces outward, and it says Mala Memoria, which means poor memory. And it has to do with what they like to do is architectural interventions with texts. So it's this concrete wall. Behind it, we see the museum. And in front of it, as you drive by, you read these words. And it has to do with that idea of institutional memory versus personal memory and history and how all these things form memory, but that memory is always imperfect. Also, it has to do with the relationship between Texas and Mexico and the idea that memory is formed through certain biases over time. Jose Antonio Vega Macatella is one of the youngest artists in the exhibition. Macatella will be here to talk about this project. His project investigates the notion of time. He spent almost 4 years in the Maine Maximum Security Penitentiary outside of Mexico City. He gained the trust of many of the inmates, and he did a time exchange with them. So Macatella would do something for the prisoner outside of the prison walls, and in return, the prisoner would do something for Macatella. In this case, Antonio Macatella arranged a birthday party for this inmate's mother, and this inmate used a pen over every scar on his body to tell the story of how that scar occurred. The work that we have in the exhibition from Macatella is this, which is a giant low pedestal in one of the very back galleries. And in this case, the inmate Fernando, in exchange for Macatella working on getting him freed, made the footprints of everywhere an inmate can walk within the prison. And so he drew all these footprints on tiny sheets of paper that are all put together within the exhibition. And any time you see a black footprint, it is when that inmate encountered surveillance. So we're still in the category of daily life, questioning and interrogating systems of power. So this gives us insight into the prison walls, into the politics of being an inmate, something we would, of course, never otherwise know. There are so many more inmates, from what I've read, in Mexico City than guards, that the inmates run the show in this penitentiary. It also is an interesting project in that the artist, Antonio Macatella, acts as the prisoner, the freed prisoner, attending birthday parties, apologizing to parents, going to someone's funeral, visiting a girlfriend, while the inmate acts as the artist. So what you see in the exhibition, of course, is the work of this inmate, Fernando. This is a work by Yashua Okun. Yashua interrogates systems of hierarchy, class structures, machismo, and systems of power. In these three videos, he kind of has a... Yashua is in the vein of cinema verite or the style of mockumentary. So Yashua holds the camera, and in this particular case, he talks with this policeman, asking the policeman if he can film him. And the policeman is saying, "Get out of here, you little blonde boy. I don't ever want to see you again." I mean, he's just hurling insults at the artist who you never see, who is behind the camera. But again, it speaks to these sort of... You know, it's over the top absurd to speak to the power wielding police force in Mexico City. This is another work by Yashua Okun. It is called Pulpo or Octopus. It is a reenactment of the Guatemalan Civil War in front of a Home Depot in Los Angeles. Yashua will be here to talk about this work, but the main thing I want to say about it is Octopus refers to the companies who went to Guatemala for fruit and sort of have far-reaching tentacles and impacted the civil war in Guatemala. So now these people who you see in the video in black shirts or white shirts are reenacting the civil war in which they fought against each other, but now on this leveled playing field as day laborers or undocumented workers trying to get jobs at Home Depot in Los Angeles. So the last category of daily life that's focused on in the exhibition is, this is another source image of Thomas Glassford's, is the idea of magnifying the everyday. Mexico City is so vibrant. Thomas found this that someone else had done and took a picture of it. He has archives of images like this that he uses in his own work. So this idea of magnifying the everyday, taking something that we may think of as a lowly material and turning it into something else. This is a work by Gabriela Orozco. It is a ping pong table with a pond in the middle. It is an interactive piece. You are welcome to play it in the galleries. But it's the idea of taking something familiar and changing how you play the game, changing the rules of the game. In this case, as many as 8 people can play at once. But in order to keep the ball in play, you have to get it over the pond in the middle with the lily pads. So it's a metaphor for the idea of crossing the pond, or the idea of travel. So you have to, again, think and navigate in new ways in order to keep the ball in play. Gabriela Orozco is one of the most influential artists to all of the other artists you see here in the exhibition. And he kind of took that idea, like the Duchampian ready-made or Joseph Beuys's notion of social sculpture, or the idea for art's potential to change society to a new level. So that's why this is an activation piece. That's why you have to get into the galleries and play a game, which is something that, of course, we're normally not used to doing when we walk into an institution to see an exhibition. And I've seen a lot of people playing, and I've tried it myself, and it's pretty fun. Another example of magnifying the everyday is Gabriel Curry. Gabriel will be lecturing here also in a few weeks. This work is called Three Arrested Clouds. It's humble materials. It is made of 2 giant boulders and 3 pairs of tube socks balled up in the middle. So the work is, where it's placed in the exhibition, it has a relationship to the Henry Moore sculpture that's on the sculpture terrace. But it also is a metaphor for man's dependency on nature. The rocks are cushioning the socks in the middle. This work is by Abram Cruz-Viega. Abram is kind of, like I've heard on the Actors Studio, or certain actors say that Robert Duvall is the actor's actor. Abram Cruz-Viega is the artist's artist. All of the artists in this exhibition have been influenced by Abram in some way. He's a very important figure as a teacher in the art world in Mexico City. And this work, in terms of the category of magnifying the everyday, these are coconuts. They have wisps of hair attached to them, and they hang from the gallery ceiling. The title is El JJ, which is a notorious sort of second in command to one of the biggest drug cartel leaders, one of the kingpins in Mexico City. So with a single minimal gesture over and over again, it changes the way we think of the ordinary coconut or the everyday. This work by Damian Ortega. Damian created a new work for this exhibition, and again, it is made of glass, broken glass, and lava rock. This was an early image he did of what he wanted to do here at the Modern when I visited his studio. And the actual piece is hard to get an image of, but it comes, here's the glass and here's the lava rock, and the whole thing is there's 800 moving parts. It's suspended from the gallery ceiling. And when you look below it and look up into it, it's like, the title of the piece is Volcano, and it's like being on the inside of a volcano. And it comes from his series about the subverted, the backward, and the inversed. Another artist who made a work for this exhibition is Thomas Glassford. Thomas, this is a picture of him in his studio, and this is him with the plans of the museum, thinking about what he would do for our exhibition here. Here's an early drawing of the piece that's in the middle gallery, where you see, if you've seen the exhibition, you know that this turned out kind of differently, but these are melamine dishware stacked together, and these are broomsticks along the wall. So here's one image of the actual galleries, the way it turned out. And Thomas's idea is that He's commenting on the economic strata in Mexico. These are broomstick handles. He pays garbage pickers to find the broomstick handles for him, and he finds them himself, and he arranges them and sort of elevates their status in these bands of color. So it speaks to the notion of modernism, and it also speaks to rearranging disposable goods that come from Mexico, making them into something else. In this case, Thomas loves the idea that each of these broomsticks have a history because they've worked and they've been in someone's hands until they were discarded. The melamine dishware is in the exhibition. It creates a giant garland that hangs down. And again, Thomas likes the idea of something that we disregard, we don't think of, a utilitarian piece of melamine that you may find in a school cafeteria repurposed by him. He loves the idea that the Ellsworth Kellys are below. and he likes having that dialogue with modernism, but doing it with things that we normally don't hold in high regard. This is Thomas Glassford's building in Mexico City. Not Thomas Glassford's building, but a building that Thomas Glassford was commissioned to do a work on. Again, it is in the Tlatelolco district of Mexico, the site of the government massacre of the students in 1968. Also the site of this ancient Aztec massacre that occurred there. By day, this building is covered with a transparent skin of LEDs. You can kind of see the patterns. But by night, of course, it lights up in these colors of red and blue and creates this arterial flow. And part of the reason why I put this here, for one thing, when you fly into Mexico City at night, you can see this building as you're coming in. You can see it for forever, and it's such a great beacon. And it speaks to the resiliency of Mexico. So this history of brutality, but out of that rises this vitality. And it's hard to talk about this exhibition because of the subject matter. But when you walk through the galleries, it actually has a really strong and vibrant energy. And I feel like, obviously, this building is not in the exhibition, but it kind of symbolizes that same kind of thing, kind of the way Mexico is resilient and the artists in this exhibition are resilient and the way they've chosen to represent what you see in the show. It doesn't make the best PowerPoint, to be honest. It's pretty gloom and doom. But again, when you walk through the exhibition, that's not what you feel at all. You feel this vibrancy. And just a few more, just a couple more slides. This is Mario Garcia Torres. He's not in the exhibition, but he's a very important artist in Mexico City. And I put this slide in just to remind myself to say out loud that it's problematic to do a survey of another country in many ways. And Mario was one of the only artists who, I mean, I had to basically talk all of them into the idea of being in the exhibition. And I had to say, no, it's not a survey of a country. It's just a theme show. And we need to have this introduction in Fort Worth so that we can go more in depth later. And most of them agreed to it. But Mario said, no, I don't want to be in a show about Mexico. And I respect him for that. And I understand it's a scary thing to trust someone from another country. And I told him I was going to take his picture so that I could remember to talk about how... Allison was with me, and I think she sunk under the table when I did that. But he agreed to let me do that. And, I mean, the point is just that it's not easy to be an outsider and go in. I mean, it's not easy for the people in the exhibition to accept that idea. But when they came, and 17 of the 23, actually 19, if you count Francis and Damian, some who didn't stay for the opening, who came, couldn't be more thrilled to be in the exhibition, and they felt the weightiness of the exhibition, and they felt the history of the exhibition. And they liked it that it was an outsider actually who created the exhibition. And I think that they would tell the truth, because that's been my experience with them always. I wanted to end with this quote by Carlos Fuentes. It's my caveat to doing an exhibition such as this. What the United States does best is understand itself. What it does worse is understand others. Well, I think that I used this quote in my essay, and I just wanted to use it here again to say that that this is, like I said, it's the beginning of a conversation. It's a survey exhibition. The fact that Francis Elise and Gabriel Orozco are in an exhibition together is actually very incredible, because they're sort of considered to be on opposite ends of the poles in Mexico, and they never, ever, ever show their work together, or they haven't in years and years. And the fact that there are very young artists who were looking to these artists from the 1990s in the exhibition with them kind of gives us this history or this idea about what's happening in Mexico. But at the end of the day, it's just about contemporary art and what's happening in the art world. And these artists, you know, are all great examples of exactly that. So thank you. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Yes. On the mound of dirt, that's Artinho, right?
Yes.
One visitor asked, they saw those white things, and they want to know if that was bones. And then also, they want to know what kept it from flying away or putting in the room, the dust from the dirt pile.
There are some objects in the dirt. There are some bones in the dirt. The dirt had to be cleaned in order to come into the museum, so everything was sanitized. But there are other objects, just what you would find on the desert floor. And it's held in place, its own gravity has knocked it down to where it is, and it's just Chihuahuan earth. Yes, Noah.
First of all, thank you for bringing the show here in Texas. And also, I was wondering about the relation between Mexico as a nationality and Mexico City as an urban center. Like, what was the relative importance of that, both in terms of the location of these artists and their practices, and even the thematics with which they were?
I think that Mexico City is kind of like New York City. It's the center of the art world there. I mean, New York City is the center of the art world, kind of period, or was or still is. But in Mexico City, most artists migrate there at some point in their career, whether it's to go to school or to have a studio or to live for a while. I looked outside of Mexico City, but all roads led back to there. I have read a few articles lately about kind of the dislocation and how people are spreading out and what that may do, but I think that would be the next chapter.
Okay, thank you all very much.